What is up, fools? Today is April 2nd, 2020. This is the QTR Podcast. Hello, welcome, bienvenue, welcome in. Let's get fucking started. First and foremost, this podcast is brought to you by my patrons. Patrons are people that sign up and donate a monthly recurring sum to help support the podcast. I'm going to shout out some of my patrons. I'm going to give you two rules for the podcast, then we're going to get started. First and foremost, this podcast is brought to you by my friend Pete Hedgetis over at The Trader's Path. The Trader's Path is a brand new investing day trading community that Pete started when he got tired of the bullshit and nonsense of other trading communities that he was a part of, where he felt like he was being front run, or maybe he felt like he was being taken advantage of. But Pete decided, fuck it, I'm going to start my own community where the focus is on the people that have signed up in the community that they create. They offer a daily watch list, they offer a live stream, they offer investor education. Pete is an all-around good, honest, and trustworthy individual. I was just having a nice chat with him last night via text message. Fine individual and big supporter of the podcast. He trades in red markets. He trades in green markets. The man knows what he's doing, and he likes to enjoy a nice glass of red wine, judging by the photo I was distributed last night. Check out my friend Pete over at thetraderspath.com. This podcast also brought to you by my friends at the Sang Lucci Steam Room. What's up, Lucci? And what's up, Charlie Bathgate? I texted Lucci yesterday, so you got to come back on the podcast. He did not text me back. So for that, saying Lucci, kiss my ass. But if you're a podcast listener, I highly recommend checking out the Sang Lucci Steam Room. Honestly, what does Lucci do? Lucci and his partner, Charlie Bathgate, and Wall Street Jesus, these guys were the original guys on the street to track options flow. They've been doing it for basically a decade. I know a lot of services offer it now, but nobody's better at it than Sang Lucci and Charlie Bathgate. What is the Steam Room? The Steam Room is a live chat on the daily that follows money coming into the options market. The options market is relatively illiquid when compared to the equities market, so it's easy to track flow, and when big players step in to swing big dongs at certain stocks, you can find that all in the options market. So he uses that information to help him try to decide what is best to do in the equities market. And you can do the same if you are privy to the Steam Room, which, by the way, is quite affordable. And it is a lovely aesthetic and just a great tool if you're a day trader. If you're not into trading options, Lucci also offers the 3LT playbook. I saw him just put out a tweet today that he is working on the 3LT playbook and doing a seminar on that probably right now while I'm doing this podcast. And he offers the Sang Lucci Master Course in Investor Education. So if you want a bunch of finance education in non-bullshit, non-jargony terms, check out Lucci. The dude's my friend. He's an honest guy. He's a good person. This podcast also brought to you by another fantastic tool for day traders, RumorHound. RumorHound, there's nothing like it right now on the market. RumorHound is a tool that's specifically designed to help you try to identify which merger and acquisition rumors, and by the way, they happen daily, they happen on CNBC, they happen on Twitter, they happen in live chat rooms all the time, which of these rumors is worth paying attention to and which ones are worth ignoring. RumorHound uses a proprietary set of variables to check this out. It takes all those variables, puts them into its also proprietary algorithm that it has using artificial intelligence. Lots of fucking big buzzwords here, I know, folks, but RumorHound works. I have seen the platform. It's nice to look at. It's well worth it, and also another great tool to have in your day trader's toolbox. Check out my friends over at RumorHound.ai, and if you don't want to check out the product, which, by the way, is a free trial, and if it isn't, just tell them I said it was, you can also follow them on Twitter at RumorHound, where they basically give you free updates on rumors as they happen. Check out my friends also at Corvus Gold, my brother Jay Mintzmyer, the shipping analyst. Thank you for your continued support. Everybody check out Jay Mintzmyer. His first name is easy to spell, Jay. Russ Valenti, my homeboy going way back. Nicholas Parks and Nathan Michaud, who, by the way, is getting ready for a major Traders for a Cause event coming up in just about 10 days. So keep your eyes peeled for that. Chris Bede, Ken R., my homeboy Chris Boas, Crichton Titus, thanks for the email the other day, brother. My homeboy Dylan Davis is in the house, got your email as well. Ken and JK Cunningham, Stank Love, Brainerd Ferguson, Matt Merle, thank you guys so much for your continued support of the podcast. And some of my newer patrons, some people that have signed up recently that I want to shout out. Gaz Harkness is back in the house. Saw you, brother. Got your email today. Stock Chart Steve, what's going on, brother? Check him out. I guess it's on Twitter, at Stock Chart Steve. Matt Tackett and my homeboy Hacken Wilhelm, a.k.a. Chilhem. Burn one down, Wilhelm, for me. David Svensson, Austin, Sucker Free EC is in the house. What's going on, Sucker Free? Duke Matlock, Mark Dyer, my homeboy Grant Black, an anonymous hedge fund manager. Thank you for your support and for signing up, my friend. Grant Black, John Edwards, John Langobardi, Toby Wilson, Robert Thrash, Tracy Connors. You guys are awesome. Nick Bradley and Vaclav Kosar and everybody that I just shouted out that told me not to say your name. My apologies, but I can't remember all that shit. Two rules for today's podcast, folks. First and foremost, have a drink. As a matter of fact, have two. There's always a two-drink minimum on this podcast. George Gavin has stiff drink time. Other people have their little drinky fucky fuck things with their podcast. This podcast has, will be, and always will be, and has been, and always will be. Folks, there's always a two-drink minimum is the point I'm trying to make right now. Take them to the face, and let's get started. Also, finally, one more rule. I'm doing this shit out of order, but fuck it. It's my podcast. What is the rule? Oh, the rule is I don't know what I'm talking about. That's an easy one to remember. See how I had no clue what I was supposed to say there? Don't listen to any of this for financial advice. I'm not a financial advisor. I hold no licenses. I own no suits. I own no bow ties. I have no degrees in finance. I basically know nothing. I know nothing. If you listen to me, terrible things will happen to you, and you will pay the consequences dearly. So don't listen to me. Not an SEC registered anything, not a FINRA licensed anything, don't have a series anything. I've got a series zero, which means I know precisely fuck all. With that being said, let's start our discussion about finance. I wasn't going to do a podcast today at all, but you can thank Jim Cramer for sending me over the edge again, who just tweeted out in response to Tesla's delivery numbers. Gotta love those numbers from Tesla. He said something like that. You gotta love those numbers. It's like, actually, Jim, no you don't. And I'm gonna explain why. But there were a couple of things that happened today. We had Lucky Coffin, Luck and Coffin, whatever it is. I just call it scam. Luck and Coffee, come out this morning and plunge like 90%. They opened the day up, set the tone for the day by basically saying everything we've done since we've started as a company has been fraudulent. We got a bunch of new information about the virus today. We got the Fed pissing me off. And I wasn't really, today I had points of agitation during the day where I was sitting around kind of annoyed, but I was also trying to get work done today. I wasn't tweeting a lot. And I was toying with the idea in my head of doing a podcast. I have some guests lined up, and I was like, yeah, I'll just wait for my guests to come on. This way, I don't really have to think about anything. I can kind of just be lazy. You know, those couple of days after all the Patreons clear on the first of the month, I just like to hop in my super yacht and drive down to Turks and Caicos and enjoy myself down there. Now, actually, I'll be using that money to pay off various parking tickets and other administrative fees that I've incurred through the course of my daily operations as a human being. But listen, Tesla reported 88,000 deliveries for Q1 today after hours. Mr. Elon Musk, Mr. Kids Are Immune to the Coronavirus, that guy, our special little guy, running our special little EV Save the Company. Save the World company out in Fremont, Florida, where he had his employees on the assembly line working up until something like 6 days ago when he had it out with the Alameda County Sheriff's Department, who had to basically shake the shit out of him and say, wise up, dumbass, there's a pandemic, send everybody the fuck home, you're not an essential business. At which point, I think somebody had noted he had gotten on his private jet and flown around, made like 15 stops in 3 days. So maybe he blew a head gasket. Who knows? Regardless, the company came out and reported 88,000 deliveries for Q1. Folks, I gotta say, everybody else in the world of automotive is going to shit. Ford has suspended production, I saw this morning. I was reading an article about all U.S. auto sales for Q1. They're all down double digits, down double digits. The fucking March numbers are atrocious. Of course, as many of you know, the economy pretty much shut down in the first week of March or the second week of March as a result of the coronavirus. So while the rest of the auto industry is engaged in reality, Tesla remains disconnected from reality for one reason or another. And they posted a fantastic Q1 number that exceeded the street's expectations. And right now, as I turn around real quick, the stock is bid up almost $70 after hours, giving this thing some kind of valuation it doesn't deserve. I can't do the math off the top of my head, but it's probably around $100 billion or more. Who the fuck knows? And who cares at this point? But the stock's up $70, and rather than ask any kind of critical questions, such as, how is it that you guys delivered 88,000 cars in the quarter when everybody else in the automotive industry is doing terribly? There's a question I would lead with. Just, I don't know, top of my head, just fucking spitballing here. We get Mr. Mad Money. There's always a bull market somewhere. Comes out and says, gotta love that number. Actually, Jim, gotta raise some very skeptical points about that number is what you gotta do, buddy. I mean, that's what I gotta do. You gotta stand there and pretend like it's something good that's happening, even though the company may not necessarily convert those deliveries to cash or convert anything to cash or make their guidance of 500,000 vehicles this year that they stated in Q4 of 2019. Should well, Zach Kirkhorn, our 15-year-old CFO, came out and said, hey, we're going to exceed 500,000 cars this year produced, I think, or delivered. Doesn't matter. They're both ridiculous projections. Rather than comment about those things, Kramer's got to come out and say, hey, got to love those numbers. Lot of great stuff to look at here. A lot of stuff that my viewers on Mad Money will be happy to talk about. The answer is no, you fucking do not, Jim. Okay, you got to ask a lot of questions, which is when the auto industry is imploding, which is basically what's happening now. I mean, the auto industry was in bad shape even before the pandemic. If you remember, a lot of the numbers coming out of China were just absolute shit for the last year, it seemed like. The year-over-year comps in China and in the U.S. were getting tough. Names like Nissan were just getting fucking smoked. A lot of cars, because the automakers had shot a lot of their loads years ago with incentives and using the low interest rates to bring people in and amortize auto loans over the course of 6 years, 7 years. I mean, they've pulled out a lot of the stops and pulled forward as much business as possible. So arguably, this pandemic happens at the worst possible time, really, for every industry, given the state of the global economy, but maybe even more so for the auto industry. And then Tesla comes out and posts this number, and Kramer celebrates it like there's something to behold there. Like there's something going on there that we don't know about. Hey, we delivered 88,000 cars. You know what I tweeted out? To where? Where? I mean, I can deliver 88,000 cars. I just got to find a place to fucking put them all. Where'd you deliver them to? I don't know. I delivered them to a hole in the middle of the desert. I drove them down the middle of Mount St. Etna. Who knows? We delivered them, though. They're at their destination, or they're at a destination. Maybe they're factory gated. Maybe they're not factory gated. Maybe we've filled the boring company tunnel with cars. We don't really know. The point is, the number's 88,000. Bid the stock up because Elon needs to get his compensation for market cap. Again, if you didn't listen to my rant about Elon Musk's compensation agreement, maybe a year ago now, all of his milestones for making something ridiculous like $500 trillion as an executive are all based on things that have nothing to do with cash flow. Hi, I'm new here. Welcome to the QTR podcast. The point is, none of it is tied to fucking free cash flow and none of it is tied to profitability. I think there's one or two things about EBITDA, but most of the other things, most of the other milestones he's got to achieve have to do with, you know, arbitrary things like market cap and deliveries and top line and things that all can go up without the company generating a profit. And so here we are with another one of those numbers, this 88,000 number being celebrated on CNBC. I'm sure Phil LeBeau is going to nut hard when he sees that number. After all, it doesn't take much for him when Elon's involved. And so let's go. It's a celebration today, I guess. We buy the stock after hours, bid it up. Who the fuck cares anymore? Again, when we're talking about stocks, folks, We're talking about comparing unicorns to fucking leprechauns at this point. As I said on the George Gabin podcast a couple days ago that I was on, you know, he asked me, well, when are stocks cheap? And I said, George, what are stocks anymore? You know, when you look at a day like today where there's 9 minutes left in the session and the S&P jumps 2% out of nowhere. I mean, really, you watch the S&P futures and they just go straight up. And as we all know, the tail wags the dog with these indices. So all of the corresponding stocks go up as the index goes up and not the other way around. That's one of the beauties of being able to trade the indices so with such liquidity. Used to be an index would go up if the sum of its components were going up. Now it's the other way around. The index goes up and it fucking drags everything with it. And if you don't believe me, put a chart of the S&P 500 on your computer and then just watch. All of them will all go up at the same time. If the S&P ticks up, everything goes up. Doesn't matter if it's a cash-generating company. Doesn't matter if it's a fraudulent company. Doesn't matter if it's a company, if it's a fucking oil company and oil is going to zero at the same time. Everything moves in unison. Just another way the markets are rigged and everything is fucked beyond all repair. Thank you very much for listening. I don't know if you saw this morning also, too, Elon Musk had come out and said that he was going to donate a bunch of ventilators to a bunch of places, and he actually sent them sleep apnea machines. If that's not a microcosm for this company, I don't really know what is at this point, folks. You know, we're saying we're delivering the alien dreadnought. It's going to be the most unbelievable factory in the history of auto manufacturing. Nope, never mind. It's just manual people doing things manually. The alien dreadnought doesn't work anymore. We had to fly in new shit. It cost us. Now we're making cars in a fucking tent. Thank you very much. Oh, we said the Model Y is going to be some revolutionary shit. I'm sorry. Looks like the Model 3 with an uglier front bumper. Thank you very much. Move on. Have a nice day. I saw a thing yesterday that they were rebuilding the Cybertruck. At this point, I don't even know what's April's fucking fool's shit anymore and what isn't. They may have to. I mean, the thing, they said safety reasons, which I can understand. I mean, the thing looks like fucking, I don't know, it looks like a bunch of crap. It looks literally like a bunch of crap wrapped in fucking Reynolds wrap that you would use to like wrap a casserole before you put it into your fridge. They're saying that they're going to have to redesign the Cybertruck. By the way, just taking deposits on that, no problem. Tesla Semi, we'll take deposits on that as well, too. I mean, if this isn't the company of just turning around and the old bait and switch, I'm not really sure what is at this point. How about the report that came out a couple months ago that the company was giving people cars in China, brand new Model 3s with hardware that was like two versions ago? They're going to give them a new car and not give them the hardware that was on the auto description. They gave them whatever, some Autopilot 2.0 instead of Autopilot 3.0 or some shit. You know, the ultimate bait and switch. Here you go, Bill de Blasio. Enjoy these 12 boxes of ventilators. Elon, these are sleep apnea machines. Yeah, well, they're FDA approved, so you can have them or you can have nothing. Thank you very much. By the way, it's just a cold, Musk. He said a couple months ago, it's just a cold. The coronavirus panic is dumb. Turns out, Elon, it's turning out to be quite a big deal. Not sure where you got your MD from. But we may want to revisit the credentials of that university at some point because not quite an accurate assessment of what he called the virality. He said the virality of the virus is looking like it's just not going to be enough because otherwise we would have to extrapolate things and that would be more than the mass of the known universe. That's what he said. I don't know if you remember Musk's tweet when the coronavirus thing first came out. He put out some tweet like that. He had to come out and say some shit where he thought he was going to sound smart in a field that he has no fucking clue about, biology. And when coronavirus first started hitting the headlines, I guess maybe because he didn't want to shut his shit down in Fremont, but he came out, and that's the kind of tweet. But excuse me, if you don't mind me mentioning, the virality of the virus has been simply overstated. If one extrapolates the logarithm of the cosine of the sine and that asymptotes upwards in a logarithmic chart, it just exceeds the known mass of the universe. And I think I have made it pretty clear that I'm a smart person, haven't I? 3 weeks later, clang, the entire human race has the coronavirus. Thank you very much for weighing in with your opinion. The man that's going to put us on Mars just missed it, huh? just missed it. He's like, according to my calculations, this is exactly like the flu and only 12 people will get it. And so 3 weeks later, Anthony Fauci's like 70% of the world's population. How does Fauci say? He goes, 70% of the human race might have it, you cockroach. He's got that Brooklyn raspy kind of accent. That's why I think Fauci and Trump probably actually get along. They both have that same fucking New York, you know, eh, we're not looking at the way the virus is going. We got to skate to where the puck's going, not to where the puck's been. Got that kind of accent. You know, Fauci, of course, much smarter, but that's besides the point. And Musk, you know, forgot to carry the one. I may have gotten it a little bit wrong, but still saving the world with my cars. Delivered 88,000 of them this quarter. Aren't you proud of me? Luckin Coffee had itself a little bit of a morning this morning. If you guys are unfamiliar with my background in looking into U.S.-listed China-based corporations, I would encourage you to watch the speech I gave in October of 2019 at the Stansbury Research Conference to an auditorium full of appalled individuals who paid something ridiculous to be there to watch me in a tank top chug a couple of Guinness beers and scream at the top of my lungs for a half hour. That speech is available on YouTube, and it lays out a lot of the work and how I kind of came around to investigating U.S.-listed China-based companies for about a half decade with a company called GeoInvesting I used to work for. So if you follow that and you're also skeptical of U.S.-listed China-based companies, it should not be an enormous surprise to you that Luckin Coffee came out today and basically admitted that everything it's done since it's been a public company has been a scam. That was my interpretation of the press release, at least. When the fuck are U.S. regulators going to wake up to the fact that Chinese companies have been taking advantage of the U.S. capital markets for decades now? For decades. When I started reading about U.S.-listed China-based companies, I think the first one that I read about was Muddy Waters doing NQ Mobile, and it wasn't shortly thereafter that I was reading Longway Petroleum that GeoInvesting had put out, and it was just one after the other after the other. Just plain old fraud. Not accounting fraud. Not, well, I'm sure there was some accounting fraud involved, but the fraud was like, hey, we say we got a factory here and there's no fucking factory, like that kind of fraud. And it's just hilarious that people think the New York Stock Exchange and people think the big four auditors and people think that, you know, everybody that the company pays off so that they can get their listing in the U.S., they think that those people are going over to fucking Guangzhou, China to make sure that these places exist and are doing the numbers that they say that they're doing, down to reviewing, you know, accounting journal entries. And that type of vetting just doesn't happen. So I don't know how many U.S.-listed China-based frauds are going to have to blow up publicly for us to understand that. But apparently we haven't learned our lesson. Not only did we not learn our lesson, but CNBC had a huge hard-on to welcome Alibaba to the U.S. markets like 6-7 years ago. It was the biggest IPO in history, folks. So we can't stop fucking talking about it all day. I remember that day. I put up a photograph of the front page of CNBC.com. They had between the lead and all of the ancillary headlines, like 15 headlines, and all 15 of them were about Alibaba. If you can find it, if you search my Twitter tag and then you search the cash tag Baba, which is $BABA, it's there somewhere. And it's just a photograph of the front page of CNBC.com the day that Alibaba IPO'd, because I needed it for the archive. Because I knew at some day, maybe, I believed personally, in my own personal opinion, without any evidence, that Alibaba might go the way of the buffalo. They might not. I just don't fucking trust Jack Ma. I don't know why. I don't trust him. Little wormy, little fuck. I don't know. Pledging his American shares to take money out of American banks. Something about it just doesn't gel with me. And actually, John Hempton hates me as a human being, but I will give him credit. He did some wonderful analysis on Alibaba back in the day where he went and was like looking at the distribution centers and was comparing the distribution centers to Amazon's distribution centers at the time. And Amazon had like automated robots walking around doing, all types of automation and logistics and supply chain and people invests. And Alibaba's distribution center just looked like a bunch of circles somebody had made on the ground with duct tape where people are just throwing packages and, hey, throw this shit over there. This is going to so-and-so province, whatever. There was no organization and no automation. And you start thinking, like, man, how do these guys process X billion amount of packages on a daily basis? So the point of the matter is I don't trust Alibaba and I don't trust any U.S.-listed China-based company. So was I surprised when I saw Luckin Coffee come out and say that shit today? I wasn't surprised. You know, Muddy Waters had put out it wasn't their work. It was somebody else's work that they said that they were given. And they published it anyways a couple of weeks ago on LK. And the stock took a dive. It was trading with a 30 handle. And then it traded down into the 20s. Didn't really recover much that day. And I think wound up it was in the 20s. It was like 26 today before it crashed. And I remember reading that report going, wow, this is extraordinarily comprehensive work. It was like 100 pages of detailed allegations about how the company was faking shit. And I was just thinking to myself, like, who sits down and writes this like this to just make a couple of quick bucks on the short side? And then furthermore, I gotta believe that Muddy Waters knew more about the source to that report than maybe they had let on. I don't know, that's just my personal speculation, because they put their whole name and their whole brand and their whole reputation behind it, which at the time, I was like, yeah, that's an interesting thing to do, to kind of throw themselves behind this anonymous report. Well, here we go, fucking 4 weeks later, or whatever it is, 6 weeks later, and the company says that they've conducted an internal investigation, and it turns out that the all 2 billion RMB of their sales since inception has been their chief operating officer just repurchasing the same latte one time after the next, the guy just goes and stands back in line, just orders the same drink. You got to do that 500 million times to make 2 billion RMB. So that's what the chief operating officer apparently has been doing at that company. But we have to change the way that we're looking at U.S.-listed China-based companies. And a lot of this dovetails into my skepticism about the virus numbers. So for those of you that have been reading my stuff about the coronavirus dating back to February, and actually late January, one of the things that I said was I was skeptical of the numbers coming out of China because of my experience and my understanding of how the Chinese do business. They're very shrewd. They don't give a fuck. They're very cutthroat, and the Chinese government is very concerned with optics. Chris, did you make that up out of nowhere? No, I researched a lot of companies that were later proven to be frauds. I got a feel for how business in the country works. I got a feel from Chinese nationals that I worked with. I got a feel for what the government there is like. I remember when Xi Jinping was elected and came into power, and what the tone change in China was. I mean, I was speaking to Chinese nationals directly about that. So I wasn't, you know, like I said on Gammon's podcast, I'm not some CIA analyst tasked with only looking at China, but I felt like I had a better ethos for the company than a lot of people did. And other people that have done work on China long before I have, Carisdale, Citron, guys like Jim Chanos, obviously Carson Block, Dan David at Geo Investing and Wolfpack, John Carnes from Alfred Little. I mean, these guys were really in the thick of that shit before I even got involved. They were the first ones to start unearthing some of the big fraud. If you haven't watched The China Hustle, it's a movie, it's on Amazon Prime. Documentary from 2017-2018, where they detail how a lot of U.S.-listed China-based frauds pulled the wool over U.S. investors. And folks, it didn't take much. They didn't have to run some type of fucking complex scheme when they were doing shareholder tours of some place in China. They would turn the lights and, you know, the fountain on. When everybody left, they'd turn all the shit off and everybody would go home. I mean, didn't take some sophisticated plan to dupe U.S. investors. As long as you were paying the exchanges, paying your audit fees to whoever your auditors were, paying whoever the company was that was engineering the reverse takeover, and putting everybody on the dole, it was easy to get listed here. And to mom and pop sitting around at home looking at a company like China Green Agriculture and thinking, wow, that's got a PE of 2. That's cheap. Instead of thinking, man, maybe there's something there I should be worried about, they just buy it up. And a lot of these Chinese companies get included in ETFs and they get included in indices. So they get bought kind of automatically. When we should be asking the skeptical questions, we're not. We're sitting around going, well, you got to give Tesla credit for 88,000 deliveries. Got to give them credit. Great job. Here's a question. Where are the fucking cars? That would be my question. You know, I'm just throwing things out here. I'm just spitballing off the top of my head, folks, all right? I'm not the world's best financial analyst. That would be my first question. Interesting. GM is doing precisely nothing. Ford has shut down their factories and you guys are breaking records. Okay, makes sense with the Q, man. No problem there at all. So the point is, I don't trust China. And again, this dovetails into discussion about the pandemic. So what did I write a couple of days ago? A couple of days ago, I wrote my third article on the coronavirus. My first one was entitled, I don't fucking know off the top of my head. The first one was basically an article about why we needed to pay attention to the information that was outside of China. This was February 2nd. I wrote this article before the coronavirus was even a headline in the United States. It wasn't even getting news play on the little bottom thing on Fox News. Not the main banner, but even the little fucking scrolly thing on the bottom. Maybe just one thing. You know, some guy died in Wuhan yesterday. Bang. And that's it. But it wasn't even getting any press then. And I said, listen, we got to start thinking about looking at the numbers outside of China because I don't trust the numbers coming out of the Chinese government. And it took a little while. It took 2 months of people telling me I'm crazy and I'm fear-mongering and this and that and the other. But sure as shit, there it was. If the headline didn't come out yesterday, U.S. intelligence briefs the White House that numbers coming out of China are probably underreported. Ladies and gentlemen, that's called fucking game, set, match. Now, if I could only take my shit from 2 months ago and shove it down the country's throat, then get somebody to actually listen to it, read on it, report on it, which is the difficult thing, which of course I didn't. The point I made in that article was we got to look at the numbers coming out of China for two reasons. One was I thought they were understating the numbers, which turns out to be true. The second was I was worried about the fatality rate. I thought maybe they were lying about that. Now, looking back, I think what's happened, now that other countries have had a chance to examine the virus, is I think that they decided they were going to fix the fatality rate at whatever it actually was, something like 2.3% or whatever. And they kept that number constant. So even with the fake numbers that they were reporting, the fatality rate stayed at like a steady 2.3% that whole time that China was reporting numbers. There was a guy on Twitter, EV Defender, who's been doing some great charts on Tesla, I think was the guy that plotted it out and first saw that that fatality rate didn't change. And that was very telling. You know, you would expect maybe a 10 or 1 basis point fluctuation in the fatality, you know, as data comes in from different provinces and different amounts of peoples and demographics. No, that apparently stayed the same. So then in late February, I wrote another article basically urging the U.S. to act. Now was the time, I thought February 22nd or whenever I wrote that shit, was time for the U.S. to do basically what we're doing now. Of course, April 2nd, we're a little late, even though we're using this nice flatten the curve narrative. If we had done this shit February 22nd, we could have actually flattened the curve probably. Now I'm not sure if we're not too late. But then I wrote that second article basically saying it's time to step up and do things. And my third article, which I wrote 3 days ago, March 28th, basically said that I believe China is trying to change the narrative about things and trying to blame other countries for the coronavirus, which was obviously their problem. Now, you can go off on some conspiratorial shit here and start talking about job listings at the Wuhan Institute of Virology from November and December and how, from a lot of ancillary supplemental data, it looked like, man, they had this, they understood that there was a major problem back then. Of course, the first reported case in China still goes all the way back to November. But now this idea that, oh, the US has a problem that's out of control and Italy has a problem that's out of control, but China has their shit under control and the whole world could learn from China as the example is bullshit and it's nonsense. And what I said 3 days ago, before the headline hit Bloomberg that US intelligence thought that China was underreporting the numbers, what I said was all of that nonsense that they're putting out there and the narrative shift that they're putting out there to try to make the US look bad only holds up if we continue to take their numbers at face value. And folks, when I say there wasn't an ounce of skepticism about these numbers in the mainstream media, there was not an ounce. MSNBC, CNN, The New York Times, Fox News, Bloomberg, everybody ran with China's numbers. The only person that said anything back in the day when this shit was going on was Senator Tom Cotton, who I think in late February, early March started to wise up a little bit and say, eh, a lot of inconsistencies here. I'm not quite sure we should trust China. They haven't allowed us to kind of do our own independent objective analysis of things in the country. I think at one point they denied people from the World Health Organization from coming in the country. Tom Cotton was the only guy that stepped up and said things. And of course, what did we do to thank him? We labeled him a racist. And we complain that we shouldn't be calling it the Wuhan virus. We should have been calling it COVID-19. Ladies and gentlemen, the United States of America always focused on the part of the problem that matters, right? While we were dicking around trying to figure out what the fucking, what we should call the virus so that we don't offend Chinese people, right? While we were fucking worrying about that, everybody else in the mainstream media was posting these numbers as though they were gospel. And the only thing that gives China the power to come around and say that the U.S. fucked up and the U.S. was dragging its feet and look at how stupid the U.S. is and the U.S. This is another one that's happened over the last 72 hours. People come out and say the U.S. has more cases worldwide than anybody else. It's like, yeah, if you believe the numbers out of China, if you think those numbers are understated by a factor of 15x to 40x, which is what was reported in the mainstream media yesterday, okay? Don't ban my podcast for saying that. I'm already demonetized, by the way. Thank you, patrons. But that was reported in the mainstream. If you believe those numbers, then maybe we're not the biggest fuck up out of the whole world. Folks, how do you have a country of 1.3 billion people that are so densely populated? You ever see pictures of people walking through Beijing? They're shoulder to shoulder. They can't move. It's like you try to fit 1.3 billion people into a fucking shoebox. And you want me to believe that somehow the number of infections in that country got to 80-something thousand and then just magically stopped? Hey, George Gammon said it on my podcast best. If you haven't listened to my last podcast with George Gammon, do it. The math just doesn't make sense. This is not the type of situation where you just lock everybody in the house and the fucking thing stops spreading. Because it gets everywhere and it's invisible. And we don't know where it is. And we don't know who has it. And we don't know who doesn't have it. So when I tell people, you gotta prepare for the worst, and this is what I was trying to, the point I was trying to make several months ago when I was talking about this, is start doing the mental gymnastics necessary to understand that, yeah, there's gonna be famous people that come out and say that they have it, right? We already saw it with Tom Hanks, that, oh, the baseball season's not gonna happen, the Olympics aren't gonna happen, all that shit I said, right? It's all because the virus doesn't care. It doesn't care how much money we throw at it. It doesn't care what kind of press conferences we give. The virus goes and does whatever the fuck it wants to do. And those rules hold true for China, okay? 1.3 billion people in a shoebox, and you're going to tell me 80,000 people have the infection? Folks, I don't fucking think so. I've believed a lot of bullshit in my day. Heck, I've come up with a lot of bullshit in my day. I've done my fair share of bullshitting. But that one, you're not going to get past me, okay? So do I trust China when it comes to luck and coffee? Absolutely not. Do I trust China when it comes to their virus numbers? Absolutely not. The one thing that I said in my article that I want to reiterate is the U.S. should not feel bad about the amount of testing that we've done. When we see the numbers go up, and you can make the argument that the U.S. is hiding cases, not everybody's getting tested, whatever. But we're being way more transparent than I think China is. And we should hold our heads up, even though the numbers are devastating. And we know that they're going to get worse. We know the death toll is going to go up. We know that the infection number is going to go up. We should hold our heads up high and know that at least we're doing the right thing by trying to get as many people tested as possible. And trust me, if you don't think it pained Donald Trump to tell everybody to stay home for another 30 days after the 15 days were up, and you know, and I know that it pained him because he had told everybody, I want the economy reopened by Easter. Easter, wouldn't it be lovely if Christ rose from the dead and so did our economy? He had Easter set for the second resurrection. But Fauci, who I think has his ear, by the way, which is a good thing. Again, it's got to be that a fucking Brooklyn thing. I mean, they're both fucking New Yorkers, right? So there's some bond, even if they hate each other. You know, like a Met and a Yankees fan are going to be way less likely to kill each other than like a Yankees fan and a Red Sox fan. There's something about New York, even the people that fucking hate each other in New York, at the end of the day, they're still New Yorkers. You know, they still kind of have that bond. And that's what I think might be happening with Fauci and Trump. So I think it's good that Trump is apparently listening to the objective scientific data, because say what you want to say about him. And by the way, I watched Wolf Blitzer yesterday interview Mike Pence. Hey, we know the administration fucked up, Wolf, okay? Nobody knows that more than I do. And I was critical right from the get-go when Trump gave his first press conference. We got 50 cases. We're going to zero. Actually, fuckface, we're going to a million, which is not even close to zero, okay? I was very critical. I said Trump was going to lose the election on that. I came out and said it. Then, when Trump came out with Pence and did the task force and the whole nine yards, and they started saying, all right, we're going to do testing, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, I said, all right, we're moving in the right direction. So I don't know what Wolf Blitzer and John King are trying to accomplish on CNN by now just perpetually rubbing it in Pence and Trump's face. You want to talk shit? Talk shit in November when the fucking thing's under control. I don't care. Right now, the message should be that Americans should be proud of the fact that we're doing all this testing. We have healthcare workers right now that are fucking heroes. End of story. Elon Musk comes out a couple days ago. Most doctors aren't treating patients because they're scared of getting the virus. You, sir, can go fuck yourself on behalf of the nurses, doctors, and all other healthcare workers that I know, okay? Because when I went to go drop off shit at my local hospital, this is probably 3 weeks ago, as you know, I'm a prepper, so I had all my shit together in January and was stocked and ready for the pandemic and was ready for a lot more worst case scenarios than the coronavirus as we know it. But I was ready, and then 6 weeks went by and there was all these messages about, hey, hospitals are running out of supplies, people can't get masks, don't hoard these things, whatever. So I said, all right, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to fill up a box full of shit and I'm going to drive it over to my local hospital, thinking it might not make that much of a difference, but if like one person in every town can do their local hospital, then that collectively makes some kind of big difference, right? So I throw the shit in the car and I go over there and I drop it off and I see there's like four or five people in the emergency room that are working the administrative window, and they got a table set up for coronavirus shit, and everybody looks tired. And I mean, they really did look tired, and there weren't a lot of people in there at the time waiting to be treated, but the healthcare workers looked like, I mean, they were visibly tired, like they had bags under their eyes. The one guy that I talked to had bags under his eyes. Nice guy. And they're there. That dude didn't take the fucking day off. He's in the emergency room. You think he wants to be dealing with this shit? Don't you think he'd rather be home protecting his family? I mean, Elon Musk got some nerve coming out and saying most doctors are too scared. I mean, you can fuck right off with a comment like that. I don't trust Elon, and I don't trust Luck and Coffee, and I don't trust the Chinese government, and I sure as fuck don't trust the Fed. Okay? How about you're going to go out and print $6 to $10 trillion, which is what's going on right now? You realize with $6 trillion, you could cut every single human being in the United States a check for $25,000? So my question is, folks, why am I not getting $25,000 from the government? If you're going to go through the gesture of doubling the monetary base, which, by the way, listen to Peter Schiff's last podcast if you don't understand why just increasing and inflating the money supply doesn't actually do anything. It doesn't create any production. It's just more money. It's just pure inflation. But while you're at it, do you think maybe you can hook us up with more than $1,200? What is $1,200 going to do for somebody that's trying to make their monthly nut this month, pay their rent, pay their bills, and has been out of work for 3 weeks? I'll tell you what it's going to do. It starts with an F. It's two words. It ends with an L. And it's called fuck all. Even if you duck your landlord and you duck your rent and you take all the concessions that the credit card companies and everybody else are giving you, what the Fed has said is, here's $1,200 for every person. Shut the fuck up. You got your stimulus. By the way, the investment banks and major corporations, including those that were stupid enough to buy back their own stock and have $0 on their balance sheet when this hit, they're going to get unlimited support. The Fed has said the discount window is open. In non-financial terms, what does that mean? It means free money for all investment banks in unlimited amounts. You can have, excuse me, as much as you want, as many times as you want. come back, the Fed will print you out a sheet of trillion-dollar bills if you need it, whatever. And by the way, make sure you dot your I's and cross your T's, people, on your form to get your $1,200, or you might not get your $1,200 back. Ridiculous. And you got companies like Boeing that were in deep, deep shit before this thing started. They rushed to put the 737 MAX on market. You read all the articles about the 737 MAX after this disaster? They were fucking up left and right. They had whistleblowers and people saying the thing's not ready. And then they had an issue with the MCAS system and they pushed the fucking thing through anyways. And then 600 people died and the company went into turmoil because nobody wants to fly on a plane that's a fucking death trap. Good! That's how business is supposed to work. You're supposed to be satisfying the customer at the lowest price possible, not killing them, right? So if you kill the customer instead of satisfying them, your business should not be doing well. And if you're a dumbass company that takes all your free cash and you spend that all on buying back your own stock at inflated prices, when a crisis hits, you should go bankrupt. You shouldn't get a bailout. But all these companies that were fucking up before the pandemic are now going to turn to the Fed and to the government and say, coronavirus, where's my check? And that not only creates a significant amount of moral hazard, but it's essentially nationalizing industry and socialism. Peter Schiff said it great on his podcast. I'm going to try not to repeat what he just said, but I went running today and I listened to his podcast, so it's like fresh in my head. But he made a very good point. He said that when you start worrying about the jobs at the companies and not about the value that the company provides, the product or the service at the lowest possible price to keep the customer happy, and you're just worried about the jobs, I mean, that's socialism. That's really, I mean, it's Marxism, it's socialism. You're worried about the labor force. And what happens when you do that is, he gave a great example. He said, go out and start a place called the Liberal Cafe, where you're going to say everybody's going to get every benefit in the book. All of our employees get pensions and healthcare and this and that, and they all make $50 an hour to sit around and make fucking lattes. By the way, if you want to buy a coffee at that place, it's going to cost you $25 because you got to pay for all that shit. And nobody's going to go there. So then you got a business with no customers. What should the government do? Keep the Liberal Cafe in business? I don't know. Because that's certainly what it looks like is happening. You have to let these bankruptcies happen. If you start bailing out companies like the cruise lines, okay, that are domiciled in tax havens and don't even have U.S. workers and don't even pay taxes, if they get U.S. government money and you're telling my neighbor, who's a great guy, who worked for the post office and was in the Navy, he only gets $1,200, you can go fuck yourself. It's that simple, all right? And I'm not just speaking for myself. That's the fucking voice of the nation right there. Because people are tired of that shit. And look, you could be pro bailouts or against bailouts. And you got to understand, you know, whether you argue for or against the fiscal stimulus here as a result of the coronavirus, it's happening. But every politician and every business is using this as their free reign, a smash and grab job. Like I said in my podcast with the ETF experience I did the other day, I was reading an article on Zero Hedge about the private jet industry wanting a bailout. You want to talk about fucking pigs at the trough? The private jet industry, on behalf of the U.S. public, you can go fuck yourself too. I'm sorry that people are going to lose jobs, but if you have an issue with that, you have to turn around and point to management. Why? Because it's management that decides not to have enough money on hand to be able to deal with this. And there are some companies out there that you're seeing are going to continue to pay their employees. I can't think of any off the top of my head, but I've seen some headlines here over the last week or two. So-and-so, you know, is going to continue to pay employees and pay them benefits. You know, not even considering your Walmarts and your Amazons that are actually out there actively hiring. But there's other companies that are staying in business and paying their employees and making sure their employees have a living wage throughout this crisis. Because they have the means to do so. Because their management was smart enough to prepare. And if your management wasn't smart enough to prepare for something like this, then they should go bankrupt. And what does that mean? Will people lose their jobs? Some people will. Some people might not. But it means that the company will restructure its debts, most likely, unless there's a liquidation. And more competent management will come in and take over and hopefully not repeat the mistakes of past that led us to where we are today. Now, corporations don't get it, and the Fed doesn't get it either, which is why the Fed is just trying to make the bubble bigger, and at that altar is sacrificing price discovery, the US dollar, and the stock market. Because you can't even talk about valuations. You can't, you know, Chanos was on CNBC today. Chanos, one of my favorite people in the investing world. I think he's exceptionally smart. I respect the shit out of him. You know, and he said, oh, well, we're looking for companies that are cheap. We're looking for values now. And I felt like saying, how do you even determine what's cheap and what's a value anymore? Is 16 the new 8 when it comes to price to earnings ratios? Is 10 the new 5? Is 5 times earnings even a value anymore? I mean, we just don't know. We're comparing widgets to unicorns to leprechauns. What does he say in Chasing Amy? He's like, Santa Claus, the Easter Bunny, and something else. He's like, they're all figments of your fucking imagination. I forget the quote. Good movie, though. And I noticed it was on Netflix. I might watch it tonight. But, you know, the stock market is essentially a figment of the imagination now. I mean, there's no proof in the pudding. You don't need cash flows. Schiff was talking today about dividends. These companies don't even offer dividends. You know, because back in the day, that's what you looked for. You looked for, you want a company to grow earnings, but also to distribute something to shareholders. Dividends are a joke anymore. They're a joke anymore. What's the point of owning a company that's going to pay you a dividend when the equity's then going to go down 75%? You know? Then they're going to slash the fucking dividend anyways. Dividends are like the ultimate deception nowadays. So, you know me. I like to own gold. And I like to own silver. But, man, we are in unprecedented times doing unprecedented shit. And I got to tell you, last year, when I gave my speech in July, and I'm not trying to toot my own horn here, but last year when I gave my speech in July and I called it "Permabears Are Not Ridiculous People," the point I wanted to get across was that thinking you understand the financial system and the way things are always going to go is the most arrogant thing that you can do in finance. And what just happened? The Dow Jones just had its worst first quarter in history. In history. The worst first. So if I had told you last summer, when I was doing that presentation, Q1 2020 is going to be the worst quarter in the history of the stock market, what would you have said? You would say, you're fucking crazy, right? But you got to think about what I said in January also about the virus. It's not a problem until you wake up one morning and bam, it's a problem. It's not a crisis until you wake up one morning and all of a sudden the world's attitudes have changed. So anytime people give you shit about being prepared, looking forward into the future, trying to manage risk at a point where there's peak euphoria, which is basically where we were at in July when I gave my speech, "Permabears Are Not Ridiculous People," and in October when I gave my speech entitled "Our Bullshit Economy," where I said I want to call the Fed's bluff that they think they know what they're doing. When people want to give you shit in those times of euphoria, think about this example. Because we went to bed one night in February and the world was fine and the market was at all-time highs and we woke up the next morning and all of a sudden we realized we were on the verge of a global pandemic that was going to take the economy from whirring nicely like a flywheel to absolute zero. And now, instead of allowing the restructuring to the economy that should be happening with the economy at zero, the Fed is trying to paper over, and central banks are trying to paper over an entire global economy. Ladies and gentlemen, if you thought we were on unprecedented path before, you have not seen anything like this before. This is unprecedented times 10 to, you know, to the 10th power. We're trying to essentially replace an entire global economy with fiat money and paper it over for a couple quarters and hope we can just sweep this virus under the rug. Well, what happens if we can't? And everybody talking shit on gold the last couple of years. Who's that guy that wrote the article? Gold, it's still just a pet rock. Yeah, it was at 1,100 when you wrote that. It's at 16 and change now. That's called 50% gains over the course of 5 years. Compare that to what the S&P has done now with the Dow at 21,000. All right? There's a reason that people own gold. And I'm not saying that you gotta, you know, own it. And I'm not telling you to do anything. I'm just saying I own it. Because if you think the idea of the whole thing going tits up is out of the question, you're insane. You haven't been paying attention. You really haven't. You haven't been paying attention to who's running the show around here and what's going on and what the actual economy is doing versus what the stock market tells you. Which is why, again, right now we are on an unprecedented path and the economy remains complete and total bullshit. There has never been a more apropos title than the one I'm using today, Our Bullshit Economy. Even though I've used it for a while, it's never quite fit the way that it does right now. Because when you look at our economy right now, it doesn't exist because nobody's doing anything. Everybody's sitting at home. I mean, the economy is bullshit. Our monetary policy is bullshit. It's a bunch of short-term solutions all piled one on top of each other like a fucking Jenga puzzle that at some point is going to come crashing down. And when it does, you could turn around to your friend and say, hey, I got drunk and listened to Our Bullshit Economy on April 2nd, 2020. I had my fucking head screwed on straight. Where were you? And I had my liquor cabinet stocked also because I started preparing in January, just like I did. By the way, speaking of liquor cabinets, that's my next stop. I'm out of here, fools. Peace.